Farms Advice Podcast with your host, Jack Creswell. Whether you farm it, service it, or just love it, this podcast is for you. We'll bring you the techniques and technologies you can implement into your day straight from the leaders and innovators themselves. Spread the Farms Advice so that we can reach more farmers right across Australia. Follow us on all of your socials at Farms Advice, and let's get into this episode. On today's episode, we dive into biosecurity threats within Australian grain producers, what we're doing on farm, but also what we're doing at the broader border of Australia as threats come in across from importing and also for us exporting into different markets. I am joined by an exciting panel. We're trying to make biosecurity a little bit more sexier for the industry so that we can actually look at these risks, see where we can prevent rather than intervention into it. But I'll let them introduce themselves. We're joined by Jim, Stuart, and Colin from GPA Australia, the inaugural CEO. Let's kick this one off. Well, g'day and welcome to this episode, going back into GPA Australia and all the work they do for the grain farmers right across Australia. We've got an interesting one. I think it's my first having four people, including myself, in on the podcast. But let's go around, just introduce ourselves and a little bit of your background, how you got into the role that you are currently in. Colin, we'll kick it off with you, mate.
Yeah, well, you haven't got an hour to do this podcast, Jack, to find out how I became the chief executive of Grain Producers Australia. But snapshot is, was a journalist for a long time covering rural issues, a grains writer with the Farm Weekly, worked in the Canberra Press Gallery during that very quiet and uneventful period where several prime ministers were sacked and replaced by new ones from all sides of politics, and done a few other things since then. So now I'm really proud to be working for Grain Producers Australia, and Grain Producers Australia works for our state members and our grain growing members throughout Australia and the communities of grassroots networks that they represent.
Yeah, unreal. And also the inaugural CEO of GPA, with a bit of a touch of cricket in there with Brad Hodge coming on with your mental health program that we might be able to touch on later in the piece.
Absolutely, yep.
Beautiful. Let's go down to Jim there, mate. How's things? And give us a little bit of a wrap-up who Jim is behind the audio.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. It's great to be here. Me personally, I've been with the Department of Agriculture in Victoria for about 25 years. Before that, I was in horticulture. And in the last 13, 14 years, I've been involved with Plant Health Australia and GPA and the Grains On-Farm Biosecurity Program. So it's been growing stronger in those nearly 15 years, and we're looking forward to doing some great work in the future. Yeah, lots of highlights, which I'm sure we can go into in terms of what activities we get up to, but that'll be it for introduction. Yeah.
Great stuff. I'm sure we'll dive into them later on in the piece. And Stuart, introduce yourself. Where are you from and how'd you lead to the role that you're in today?
Sure. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, I'm with Plant Health Australia. That's a member-based organisation. We're about 21 years old. Our members include 39 different plant industry representative organisations, as well as 9 government members. I've got a background in grains and grains R&D. I'd spent 19 years with the Grains Research and Development Corporation, doing a lot of grower engagement and understanding what those issues were on farm.
Beautiful, and great to have you here, Colin. Thanks for putting the team together, a stellar team that it is, and discussing the much needed. We've probably seen it in the paper all too often, but also not often enough, talking about biosecurity on farm and how it's impacting grain growers right across Australia for this episode. So biosecurity, who wants to kick it off? What is it? Where is it? And how are we tackling this big beast?
That's a great question for Stuart and Jim.
Sure. Yeah, this is, and it's a question we're more and more asked, as we've seen it more and more in the news, in the papers, and in grower conversations, whether it be it, you know, updates and field days and things like that. So biosecurity, really simply, is the measures and strategies that we put in place to prevent the introduction and or the spread of new pests and disease into Australia and our plant industries, which we're going to focus on today. It also covers animal and the pathogens and diseases of animals and humans as well. But today we're just going to focus on the plant side of things and grains in particular. So it's those measures and practices that we want to stop being introduced and or spread. And we can do a range of different things on farm. So what are the things we can do to minimise the spread of diseases where they come in? We can't do a lot on farm about preventing them from coming into the country, but we can do things to stop their spread. And they're the same things that that work for our endemic pests, the pests and diseases of our crops that we see on a yearly basis anyway. So why is it important? The grains industry currently spend about $5 billion annually controlling weeds, pests and diseases, right? We're seeing a spike in prices at the moment, but we don't need any more pests and diseases to come in that's going to increase that cost, right? So that's a substantial cost. We need to keep downward pressure on that. So we don't want to be introducing any, and we don't want by accident or on purpose or consciously introducing new pests and diseases that are going to contribute to that cost, because it's a substantial cost. So we're going to try to do everything that we possibly can to recognize what are the big pests and diseases that are going to create the most impact, to say, how can we stop them leaving their country of origin before they even come here? How do we detect them at the border? How do we stop them at the border? And then if they do manage to get through because we don't have a 100-foot tall wall around our borders, they can through natural means come in. How do we stop them? And how do we detect them early enough to be able to eradicate them? So we're doing that all to protect the bottom line of grain growers.
Yeah, I think when you put that the figure in front of what biosecurity is, $5 billion, if we didn't have to spend so much on biosecurity, maybe at the farmer level more so, that we could push value into technology that's going to drive our crops yield, reduce the amount of inputs that we may need, especially when fert and fuel is through the roof at the moment. We can't get away with not adding fuel into the tractor, but with that input cost as well going through the roof, and just the sort of the broader value that biosecurity can impact on Australian farmers and how they're impacted by that as well through that $5 billion expense to the industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack, I guess if I could jump in as well, where the rubber hits the road there is where the grain biosecurity officers come in, and there's one of us in each state, all funded by GPA, and I'm sure Colin and Stuart can go into that. But a lot of the measures we promote through the various means are actually behavioural. They're not actually costly. So it's basically things like surveillance, rigorous and regular surveillance, and that's for your early detection. There's also being informed with the latest fact sheets and manuals that we distribute. There's self-assessment, there's online training, all sorts of things to make sure that farmers are biosecurity aware and have actually got some biosecurity practices in place now for the endemic pests, weeds and diseases that will stop, hopefully in its tracks, any new pest or disease that comes in from overseas, which we call exotic. And other things, practices that some industries take up better than others, but clean on, clean off, and just controlling the movement of people and traffic and machinery onto your property by making sure they're clean before they come on and may not have any hitchhikers attached. So a lot of these things are behavioural. They don't cost any money, perhaps a bit of time. And then we've got all the resources and printed material and farm gate signs, etc., all paid for by grain grower levies to back that up.
Yeah.
I suppose just not going blazing into a paddock to see... just do a quick crop check without cleaning off, and to see how that can impact yourself. What sort of biosecurity risks have we come about in the past within Australia, maybe pushing 20 years or so?
Yeah, we don't even have to look that far back, Jack. In the plant industry, we'd probably deal with multiple incidents each year. Some of the ones of recent note, fall armyworm, back in 2000, came in the north of Australia, and rapidly established and has spread. But each year it retracts back to the north just because it doesn't like the cold. You know, we've also seen a number of incidents and interceptions of things like capra beetle that are coming through on non-regulated pathways. What we mean by non-regulated is that, you know, they're not coming in on plant or imported plant goods or grain, imported grain that we're bringing into to Australia. They're coming in on packaging, cardboard packaging or fridges or you know, babies' high chairs, those sort of things that aren't necessarily seen as a biosecurity risk. So there's some really important ones there, and it's proving that the systems and processes we've got in place are picking up those things before they get a good hold, before they get a toe in into Australia.
Yeah, we'll speak about this with Barry Large in one of the previous episodes about that the they were coming in, travelling in on brand new white goods. How's the defence of Australia actually? What are they doing? Are they cleaning these fridges now off the reaction of what's happened?
So two things here. We can't, and we never have been able to rely on one line of defence, right? So it's really kind of with a double line, if not a triple line of defence. And bringing in what Jim was saying before, we've got border inspections, but just because there's a lot of pressure at that border, we need not only the community, but people in rural Australia and grain growers themselves to be on the lookout for things that are unusual, things that are not quite right. That's been built up over a number of years, and we've seen with the fridges in particular, you know, it's been people of the community that have, you know, opened up a brand new fridge and saw some, you know, tiny beetles in there, and rang the hotline. They responded straight away, which is what our key messages have been, that if you are importing goods or you are receiving imported goods and things aren't quite right or they've got contaminants in them, to speak up to action. So it's one to be aware of, you know, that we are importing goods, and the second one just to ring up and report, because if you report, we can actually do something about it. If you don't report, we've got a really, we haven't got any hope.
Yeah, definitely not productive off the back of that. But Jim, you were about to say something?
Oh, it's just that the system does work, and the interconnectivity between the government agencies, which the biosecurity officers belong to, as well as, I guess, the facilitating agency, which was Plant Health Australia, through all of those networks, we managed to undertake a massive surveillance operation where all the cardboard would have gone. So we spent a lot of time in landfills and recycling centres with capra beetle traps. And over the course of about 12 months, we were able to prove that we had, in fact, it hadn't gone past the early detection, and we are now still, in fact, free from capra beetle. So there's a few advantages there with the large government agencies, as well as the direction from the grains industry, who sits on the board, the steering committee at the Plant Health Australia. So it's an interconnected system that really does work.
And I think that's a good segue, Jack, if you like, to talk about Grain Producers Australia's role on biosecurity.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned Barry Large there, who's our chair. Grain Producers Australia has been representing growers who pay a levy, not just for the Grains Research and Development Corporation, which is 0.99% of their farm gate grain sales levy, but also for Plant Health Australia. It's one of those things that often goes on unnoticed, and Barry's been doing this for a long time, representing growers under those arrangements through Plant Health Australia, which includes the Emergency Plant Pest and Response Deed. And not all growers would be aware of it, but the deed, as we call it, that they pay 0.005% of their levy towards that, and 0.01% of their levy goes towards Plant Health Australia. And between those two, we've got, as you say, a lot more works going in recent years into preventative measures and GPA for our members, and increasing engagement on biosecurity. We also have a GPA biosecurity committee, which Barry chairs. And we set that up in recent years, and that allows us to bring experts along who can talk to our members about those high-level issues around biosecurity, and what we need to do to advocate better protections for growers. And of course, Mike, our election policy document this year, we called for increased focus from the government on preventative measures. I think it's one of those areas that we all, you know, most farmers or our members are saying to us, we simply just don't want these pests getting onto the farm. We don't want to deal with things like Capra beetle at all. We want to keep it out. The estimates are that Capra beetle would cost our industry $15.5 billion over 20 years and remove access to key markets. So GPA has been doing a lot of this work behind the scenes, working with people like Stuart and Jim. You know, that levy has been funding the grains farm biosecurity officers. So people like Jim, who are in each of the states, working with their experts in state government and sharing that responsibility, and also working together to deliver those pragmatic tools that Jim's talking about. I mean, Jim, you might want to talk about that press release we did recently and some of the media you've done on that, the vehicle movement toolkit, which we've provided. That's a perfect example of some of the 1%ers that are making a difference or can make a difference. But another high level, line that we're hearing or statement that we've hearing recently from senior biosecurity officials is around the importance of preventative measures. And we know with coronavirus, I think that's helped sharpen people's understanding of the importance of biosecurity and how these small things are often unnoticeable to the eye can get out and about and have a big impact on what we do, not just the economy and what farmers are doing, growing and selling grain like you, Jack, but also just for our lives and the impact that could have. But you know, we're being told that for every dollar that's invested into preventative measures, it saves $30 in eradication. And it's a great opportunity now with coronavirus for us to really sharpen government thinking about the importance and the value of investing in preventative measures, better early detection and monitoring as well. I'm really proud of the work that GPA does in this area, and I'm really proud to work alongside people like Stuart and Jim, and our biosecurity, for example, is a real great way for people to get together and sharpen our discussion and understanding of what this means for grain farmers.
Yeah, I think the risk is there. People probably most of the time unaware of the work going on behind the scenes of these pests coming into Australia, but also the work going on behind the scenes of what GPA is doing, integrating with the different systems around Australia. I'd imagine it's quite dynamic in terms of going state to state, dealing with different policies. But on the podcast, I try to stick away from the politics of everything. But with this is such a huge risk. New government coming in. How are we actually getting biosecurity front of mind for the politicians? And how are we going to drive change so that we don't have to spend $5 billion, $15 billion in losses for the grains industry?
Well, that's a great question. We had a briefing from the new minister last week for the grains industry. Biosecurity is one of his priorities at the moment. Farm labour is another one. And I think sustainability and climate change so are also longer term priorities. But we know there's FMD on our doorstep for the livestock industry and lumpy skin disease. So he's actually managing these now. He's got to hit the ground running. He's got to get his team together. He's very lucky to have someone with Andrew Metcalf's skill and experience as the head of the department, giving him that support as he transitions into the role. But he seems like a very pragmatic person who's an experienced politician, but a problem solver, having been a chief of staff to Anna Bligh when she was Queensland Premier. So there's nothing like an actual threat to sharpen your thinking, especially when you're coming into a senior political role like that. And of course, grains, well, you know, we know what our threats are. We know what we need to do. And we're going to have impacts if the Australian livestock industry does get FMD, and we hope it doesn't, because of the amount of grain that goes into livestock. So everyone's going to feel it. So shared responsibility and shared accountability are big things that we talk about in the biosecurity space. And as I say, we're not looking for a pat on the back here, GPA. It's just important that growers know that their levy comes out of their grain check. And this is the sort of work that we're doing to strengthen the system. And GPA, you know, we're open for people who are willing workers and want to get in and help strengthen the system.
Yeah, I think that goes on to say the impact that you are having with GPA. Was that, you were talking about Murray Watts before?
the new ag minister, look, he's well aware of what the biosecurity risks are. I think it's one of those areas people know what problems are and the threats, but these things are quite small and it's hard to, you know, we're an island nation, so that's a biosecurity or a marketing advantage for our produce. But, these things are quite small. It's hard to monitor every single nook and cranny. So you've got to manage the risk accordingly, and government investment has to be targeted accordingly. The best thing is it's front of mind, and I think it's a good time. We've got a lot of levies around at the moment from the last big grain harvest, so it's probably a good time to invest in some of these preventative measures and strengthening them, and that was the message that we put out there in, as part of our election policy document. It's great to have people like out there like Jim as well on the ground working on these things every day and what they do for a job. But at the higher level, that's our role is to advocate that better investment and targeted investment to make sure these things don't get in to start with to protect our growers.
And Jack, if I could just jump in there, it's also about you, your area of concern. I mean, it's good that we've got Colin and Barry talking to the politicians, but at the, again, where the rubber meets the road, that's not my, or even a farm, at the farm gate, it's not our sort of area of too much concern. We can't do a lot about it, but what they can do about is having, as Colin was saying before, having a conversation about a risk matrix or a risk that anyone visiting the farm might pose to their productivity. So it's just simple as having a conversation, and we've released recently just a really simple risk matrix about what is the risk and what's the likelihood of something happening, and just having a conversation with whoever's coming onto your property. And we've also had a good run in the media with other simple things too, like trying to avoid roadside dumping of grain, which we're seeing a lot more of, which could become a biosecurity risk. And it's these kinds of loose ends that might prove to be problematic if we do get another detection, and we need to really clamp down and find out where the pest, how far it might have gone to. But yeah, it doesn't have to be high level. It's just simply talking to people visiting your farm and working out what sort of risk they might have to your productivity, and then taking mitigations, whether it's a washdown or a parking bay or just excluding them altogether. And that helps you prevent the entry of hopefully anything nasty.
I think the listeners of the podcast are always looking for the 1%, and it's more so than just going to revolutionise what they're doing on farm. They're not going to stop biosecurity all at once tomorrow, what they're doing, but they want to know, like, should they be washing their ute down. I think last year, if I drove a truck up to Moree, I could have nearly filled it up by driving the park bays with, like, just the empty half ton of grain out there. Unfortunately, it's happened. But even in cost, the barrier of what that grain was, especially at the moment, of what it would be worth to the farmer, but maybe not the truckie going across the weighbridge is the difference. Colin, what were you going to say there?
I'd just be interested to know what biosecurity means for you and your business, Jack.
I think, from a standpoint, we're predominantly livestock, but cropping as well when we can. Having the ability to sort of segregate where the risk can be for cars, utes coming on farm, and then we're just using our own farm vehicles that we know are clean. Because we're quite close to town here, we do need to be on top of it a little bit, and how that can work going into our crop paddocks. Mid-crop and also for livestock, it is the problem right across the board for us as mixed farming enterprise. It is an issue. We look to what GPA is doing to MLA, what they're doing, just to see what we can be doing. And these templates that are designed just to give us a little refresh on what's going on. I think biosecurity, I actually never really worried about it, but Dad was just always up me to keeping routine of just having to think about what it is. It's in thin air until it's there, and prevention against intervention for what biosecurity risks are for us as a farmer. And I think younger farmers are sort of, I know, trying to get a hold of what is biosecurity and how can I physically do it. I think a lot of people physically want to do something. So washing down the utes is a good way, washing down all your equipment before going, maybe you're contracting or something. I think contracting would be even worse in terms of having to do stuff on different farms, cleaning down, especially before you get there, not spreading the seed, the husk that you get after harvest. But no, it's interesting times. I think as farmers, our family farm, we're just having to be more aware of what's going on, and be able to react and move to the conditions of what's happening. Maybe something is spread and we need to be on our toes a little bit more.
Yep.
But from that, where do you see in a break area? I was going to ask this before. In a breakout of Capra beetle or something, how can we actually contain this on farm? If it does happen on farm, I don't know if you have any examples of it. What do you do initially?
I could jump in if you like, guys, and you if I miss anything. I'll just say at the outset, Jack, that we've got in place already a sentinel silo program around the country in most states, and that includes sentinel areas at the ports as well. So we're looking for Capra beetle for early detection. So we're hoping that that might raise the flag early and we can get on and eradicate it if it does come in. But the other thing is, as I said earlier, we're all backed by enormous departments with emergency response teams, et cetera, et cetera. So after there'll be a massive surveillance effort to try and work out how far any new incursion has got to, and then that'll determine what happens. But that whole process is run, this is where Stuart can jump in, by the a plant health committee at the federal level where the grains industry are represented by GPA.
And so and this is the cost shared. So we recognise, both government and industry recognise that there's benefits to both parties about eradication. So as Colin said, a dollar invested in the early stage is going to save you $30 down the track. So this is where it's cost shared. So under an agreement known as the deed, governments and industry come together to, as Jim said, identify how far has this particular pest and disease established, or how far has it got. Then we work out an eradication plan as to how we're going to and then action that plan. So we're going to eradicate it, make sure there's a lot of tracebacks. We've heard a lot of tracing with COVID. There's a lot of that tracing happens within any sort of incident or interception that we trace back. So on-farm record keeping is really important. So we know where seed may have come from or where you may have sold seed or grain to, so we can try to piece together how far this may have spread. But then dedicated team to come through and eradicate if eradication is technically and economically feasible to process that. GPA are part of that decision-making process, but that's together with other affected industries, as well as the nine governments sitting around the table and what we call the National Management Group that will ultimately sign off on the budget to control it. The reason why we really focus on that cost-sharing agreement is that we don't want the finances or a lack of finance to be a reason for not trying to eradicate this disease. There's too much at stake. We've got to make sure the money's there available, the mechanisms there available to allow us to do that and just get on and deal with it. We do a lot of preparation beforehand, but knowing that every incident, every interception is unique in its own way, it's in a different geography or a different port or a different beetle or a different bug or a disease or a different whatever it might be, you can't be 100% prepared. That we've got to allow enough for that, the dealing with it as the issue arises and developing that plan.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, the on-farm record keeping, whether it's, I don't know about your previous experiences, whether it's digital or paper-based, and how that can actually play a role in the outside value of actually digital record more so for this new ag tech. There's a lot of this sort of stuff and farmers are a bit wary what's going on. If you did buy grain on farm and it did happen to have a biosecurity risk and you sort of locked it up in the silo, just where that's come from, identifying who sold it, and if that was a second purchase off that again, how vital that information can play out, whether you use it once 20 years probably that barrier is going to save, where Colin was saying that $15 billion could be wiped off the industry for the year.
Yeah, exactly. So we have done some surveys trying to look at understanding the different technologies that farmers are using to store those, you know, on-farm records, whether it be, you know, Phoenix or AgWorld or, you know, things like that. So that while there's not, you know, a large market player that dominates the industry, there's a few different products that have got a good hold on in the industry, but it's still, you know, I think the figures are about 30% of farmers still use pen and paper for their record keeping. So it's not, you know, we don't want to necessarily pick and choose. It doesn't matter whether it's pen and paper or digital, but recording, that's the message, you know, record, you know, and then ultimately we'll transfer those, you know, pen and paper will ultimately, you know, transfer to digital. But doing that more automation, using barcode readers for chemical drums, all those sort of things, is going to help 100%.
I think if you think about biosecurity in the same context of COVID, Jack, and it is handy that we've got a lot of money that's ready to be invested in, you know, or there is money available from levies that can be invested into research and other projects around biosecurity. Mm. But the experience of COVID has shown us, you know, technology is not the be-all and end-all. There can be a lot of gaps in the system, but we can certainly put ourselves in a much stronger position by applying that sort of thinking to how we can future-proof our industries, or at least minimise the risk. You know, let's hope there's no limousine drivers in Sydney with a Capra Beetle on the vehicle somehow going out to farms. But also what we can do, or farmers can do, you know, if you think about sea containers moving on the farm, you know, you just want to look that in a different context. There's a lot more movement of sea containers across the globe now. There's a lot more movement of people. There's going to be a lot more people on the planet in future. So our job to grow more food to feed the world's becoming bigger. And that means there's going to be more food moving around the globe and more people. So that means biosecurity is going to be a bigger issue, or the potential risks are bigger. So we need to really forward think how we go about this to protect growers and our industry, and take advantage of any technologies we can, but also to look at a sea container and think, you know, there's a lot more of those things moving around the globe. Has that been somewhere in another country? Not just, geez, I need to get that job done because I need to go to the pub Friday night, and we know farmers are busy like everyone else is, but maybe stop for a moment and think, hang on, I just want to check that is free from any risk, and double check before you let it onto your farm property.
Yeah, I think that goes into the farmer. We wear many hats. We're not like other businesses where you have a biosecurity officer. I think that farmer and the employees are each their own biosecurity officer. Unfortunately, yeah. I'd love to hire a biosecurity officer, but not all achievable on farm. And how we deal with that individually. I think Rabobank predicted an estimate of 23.5 million or something hectares sown this year, so that's the record breaking. So this harvest is going to be a bit of a buster for Australia in terms of grain. So I suppose keeping that mentality fresh for biosecurity on the world markets, to keep others out there thinking Australia is green, we're quite on top of all of our standards, and just making sure that we're reducing risk both on the farm level but also on the port level, on the grain sites as exported. There's plenty of exporters across Australia, each having a go, but where are they playing it out biosecurity-wise?
That's right. It's not a sexy topic necessarily, except when Jim's putting out a press release, I beg to differ, but it's critically important. And I remember I was working in the press gallery, as a personal story, but when the Johnny Depp issue broke out about the dogs coming in, and I think most of the journalists and people writing about it were fascinated what the connection was between what Barnaby Joyce was saying about the concern with these dogs sneaking through the border, but what that actually meant in terms of the national interests. And in a way, it was a stroke of brilliance to raise the issue of biosecurity. Some may disagree with that, but it certainly got people talking about biosecurity. And that's our view, GPA working with PHA and extending to the work that Jim does on the ground. Getting out onto farm, You know, we can't talk about it enough in terms of how important it is, and how important it is in terms of our responsibilities to protect the industry. And that, you know, there's a lot of work that we do that protects our peers as well around that. And I guess that's why it's involved in the levy system, to make sure that there's that investment there. And experts like Stuart, and that's how we work at GPA, you know, when there are issues to deal with, they bring all those state and federal experts together. And, you know, it does come down to some questions around cost allocations as well as part of our responsibilities, but also, you know, getting the advice from them about what the risks are is critically important for all growers.
I think maybe try to make it a bit more sexier for the industry just to take it on board. If Johnny Depp was bringing across 2 bushels of wheat, I think it would have been a bit different how people would play it. They would, just because they're dogs and that risk is cuter than a couple of bags of wheat. I think that's how it plays out in people's mind a lot more. But more so the farmers. The farmers know what's going to impact their own farm, what we do at our boundary, but also Australia as a whole.
Yep. Spot on. There's some of those. There are pests and diseases that that do. I'll use the term loosely in air quotes, if I could, respect the farm boundary and fences. But there's some of them that market access related pests. So you mentioned before, 23 million hectares of crop. Even if we grew 2 tonne per hectare, you know, close to 50 million tonnes of grain, of which some are accessing markets because we are free of certain pests and diseases, and we can sell at a higher rate, at a premium. Now, if we don't demonstrate that we're free of some of these pests, or if we get some of these pests and now we can't access those markets, that, you know, the markets either close or they, you know, significant reduction in price. We've seen what happened with China and barley, you know, when we lose a market overnight. We do bounce back, and the grains industry's got a really good track record of in terms of resilience and bouncing back. But that's, you know, it's an area where we need to think about too, when biosecurity, market access, and what happens on farm, how do we respect that conversation and not treat, you know, other farmers just because something happened on their farm and they were the one to stick their hand up and said, I've got a disease, that there's no connotation, that industry are proud of that they raised it and reported it, and not seen as a villain or someone that, oh, they must farm worse than us because they got the disease and we didn't. I think that's an important conversation to have.
Yeah, maybe taking away the stigma of it, but coming together collectively. That was what I was just about to touch on. I try to encourage everyone to take one key takeaway home with them, implement it or use it as motivation, but hopefully for the broader community, the 10 farmers around them, coming together as a collaboration of farmers, not farming together, but they're your neighbours. Would that be able to work better for biosecurity? I'd imagine a few are already doing it now just to enhance their region and reduce the risk of biosecurity, how that can play out. Do you think that is a good example of how farmers, especially when you're dealing with 50,000 acres, hectares, whatever, of crop going ahead?
Yeah, definitely. It touches on area-wide management, how we manage our crops, not within the paddock, but across a district. So we know when a particular pest, even if they're endemic, something like stripe rust, something like aphids in canola, something like, you know, crown rot, if someone's picking it up early, then we know to go out and look. We know to share that sort of reporting, that crop monitoring. There's no not a lot of competition in there. You're not going to lose any money by sharing information. But I think it's giving you a good heads up about get out there and start looking, get on top of it early. The earlier you get on top of it, the more money you can save.
Yeah, we're lucky too, if I can say, Jack. We're all so interconnected now with, I mean, I follow hundreds of farmers on Twitter, and there's Facebook groups and all sorts of online and social media now. We've all got such great access to information, whether it be at the paddock level or district wide or even nationwide. So it's a great opportunity, really, and it's to share information and knowledge. No one's as isolated as, I guess, you know, we once were, because we're just so interconnected. So information's out there if you want it.
Yeah, absolutely. And essential to check it out. Farm Twitter is probably the best thing that I get to do. Have a look at it all day. Colin would know best. He's a good little tweeter. But yeah, it's a fantastic way to know things in 1 second. I sorted our erosion problem and already had some ag tech on the job just before this call, actually. So yeah, if you've got a question out there, ask. We're all neighbours in the end, within farming. But that goes to play into dealing with services with biosecurity within Australian grain producers. Agronomists are well known. How can farmers use these different services, using the government branches like yourself there, Jim, and Stuart for yourself at Plant Health Australia, and the service above probably, which GPA, which is the umbrella of all of this. How can myself and other farmers out there utilise these services, communicate with our agro, to prevent these risks on our own farm in our region?
I'll jump in first, if you like. As I said earlier, a lot of these services are free. So initially, go to the Plant Health Australia website, or it's even linked through other GPA or under Grains and Biosecurity, and just do the quick biosecurity online training. So it's a quick sort of questionnaire to see where you're at with your biosecurity, and you may learn some tips and some tactics to moving forward. Contact your biosecurity officer in each state, and again that information's on the websites, but you can start with a biosecurity gate sign. You know, they're free, they're paid for by the levy. Hang up a couple of gate signs at your main entrances, and then people practice then to contact you before they come on to your property. That way you can see what sort of a risk they might pose to your property. But a great start, I think, is the biosecurity manual. It's actually a booklet more than a manual. It's only about sort of 20 pages with lots of pictures, but it really goes into what biosecurity is in simple terms, and then what are some of the tactics you can implement at the paddock level to prevent pests and diseases spreading. So that manual, I'll call it a booklet, manual might sound scary, is a great start along with the online training, and then giving us a call or sending us an email, and we do run workshops. Now that COVID's finished, we're at the field days, GRDC seminars and updates. We run training, all sorts of things. So I also go out onto farm to check, put traps out to check for capra beetle or test grain, collect the bugs and see if they're resistant to phosphine. So the complete sort of service now, which is good that we're allowed outside. So I gave you a long list, but yeah, start with the booklet, I reckon.
Yeah. Last one, Jim, just so that we can locate these branches, when you talk about we, who should the farmer be getting in touch with?
Contact details, Jack. If people go to grainsbiosecurity.com.au,
yep.
That's got all the contact details for each of the biosecurity officers in each of the states. Their contact details, if you want to contact them directly. Or as Jim said, at the this spring's field days, there will be a presence from either GPA or the biosecurity officer too, that they can engage. Grains Biosecurity, so grains plural, grainsbiosecurity1word.com.au.
Beautiful. I'll have that in the show notes as well. And I think I'll have a look at that training course and I'll slap that up. And people, they can do it as a refresher or they can do it as a new start into the program.
Yeah. And what I really wanted to reinforce, Jack, was that, you know, growers are paying for these services, the resources there that Jim's just outlined, the expertise of people like Stuart. And GPA's role, you know, we've been doing this for a long time behind the scenes, and GPA's role has been to make sure we get value for that money, and it goes into improving and strengthening those biosecurity protections. So really just want people to know that this is what we're doing. I mean, if people have any great high-level ideas about how we can advocate to get better outcomes, or they want to get involved, then they're welcome to reach out to GPA. Because ultimately, it's your business that we're protecting, working with these different groups, and it's your money that's being invested. And obviously, the GRDC does research in that area as well. So how we share that responsibility, as I said, and improve shared accountability to make sure this stuff doesn't get here to start with. But if it does, we get rid of it quicker.
The grains industry, Jack, is in a pretty unique position in the fact that we're not 100% reliant on government for our biosecurity, you know, for our post-border on-farm biosecurity stuff. Through GPA, the industry is investing more than other industries, percentage-wise, levy-wise, doesn't matter, is investing more into biosecurity. So that's why we've got people like Jim and others dotted around the country that don't turn off when we get a change of government, that they are there, they've got long-term plans, they are there committed to engaging with industry and making sure that growers know what to look out for and what they need to do about it in terms of either preparation or how to report it. So these programs are in place. They are paid for by growers. It's a service to be used.
Yeah, exactly. We all have like a baiting programming, cropping programs, and we also need that biosecurity program or on our own farm and probably easily searchable, these templates that can be slapped straight into your own scenario. No farm's the same. I've never seen a farm the same. So farmers out there, just maneuver it into your own sort of enterprise and see how it works there and try reduce the risk. If we're running a fox bait program, we want our neighbours to as well. So that biosecurity plays out the same sort of way in how that can reduce the risk, kill off the fox, and improve our yield all overall.
All right.
$10 for the scalp.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But before you go,
should we put a bounty on the capra beetles' heads as well at the borders?
Geez, I'd like a scalp of a capra beetle.
As long as people don't start farming them and breeding them up just to get some more money.
Probably happen.
Yeah.
Before you go, Stuart, Jim and Colin, what would be your one piece of farms advice that you would give to a farmer looking to start on his own farm at farm level as well without going into the politics of it all?
Well, I can go first if you like. Yep. Don't be overwhelmed. It's simple steps. Small steps, just keep it simple. Ask for advice. The information's out there, but access it when you're ready. But don't get overwhelmed by it. That's be my message.
Yeah, that's a wise one, Jim.
Yep. Awareness and action, mine. Be aware of what's happening around you. Be aware of what your crops are telling you and take action. Either control it, ask for advice, tell someone.
Yeah.
From Jim, Colin.
Yeah, well, as I said, you know, your levy money is going into improving biosecurity, how you want to engage with that and invest in that and those resources that are available in your own business is a choice. It's also an investment of your time into building a stronger industry. And I look at it a bit like I do if you want to go back to a cricketing cliche, but you know, you've got a number of specialist skills coaches down at the club for batting, bowling or fielding or wicket keeping or spin bowling, and you can choose whether or not you want to engage in those resources to get better at that particular skill and, you know, to be a better all-round player and performer. So, you know, those resources are there. We encourage people to engage with them and use them, including GPA.
Beautiful. Well, Colin, Stuart and Jim, thanks for coming on the Farms Advice podcast, passing on your own piece of Farms Advice, but also dealing with this topic that won't just be covered in one episode. We'll be covering it initially. So every guest I've actually had on, I ask them after the episode, what's the three biggest things that they think impacting agriculture? And all of them, without doubt, have said biosecurity. So it is in the minds of everyone going around. But thank you, great heads coming together here today for biosecurity and the better of Australian agriculture and grain producers.
Thank you for tuning in to the Farms Advice podcast. It is produced by Adverturize Digital, the agribusiness marketing specialist. Go to farmsadvice.com.au for more information on this episode and the others before, and spread the Farms Advice. If you love this episode, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe, as it helps other farmers find us too. But until then, next Tuesday, keep on farming. In the spirit of reconciliation, the Farms Advice podcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country for Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.